Now, according to the New York Times presidential tracker, 24 Democrats and 2 Republicans, including President Trump, are running for president in 2020. Independents, third parties, none so far. Early this year, former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz kicked around the idea of launching a third party or independent campaign, but has since put that on hold. The Times has him in the unlikely to run category. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg also considered getting in. He became a Democrat last year, saying an independent bid would reelect Trump. He decided against running for president in March. Last time a third party or independent candidate really gained any national traction was 1992, when Ross Perot took nearly 19% of the popular vote. Perot passed away this week at the age of 89. We thought it would be a good time to look at the history of independent presidential campaigns and what kind of future they may have, if any. Laura Brown is the director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of multiple books, including Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob, for having me on.
Well, before we talk about third-party runs and independent runs in general, let's look at Ross Perot. Why was he able to capture this significant share of the popular vote? No electoral votes, but a lot of votes.
Well, certainly he tapped into this desire for change. There was something of an exhaustion with the Republican kind of dominance in the presidency. There had been 2 terms of President Reagan and then 1 term of George H.W. Bush. And there was certainly a desire in the country for really politicians in Washington to pay attention to American workers, to pay attention to the budget deficit, and to really take seriously some of the issues that were gaining traction among blue-collar workers who were not feeling served by either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And Ross Perot jumped right into that void and announced essentially on Larry King Live that he would run if the people got him on the ballots in all the 50 states.
I want to give a listen to Ross Perot. This is from CBS's Face the Nation in April of 1992.
I believe that there is so much waste around here. And again, every time you get into, see, I'm the only guy that talks numbers. Mm-hmm. I love this. Nobody else will even talk about it. I've said it's like a crazy aunt in the basement. Everybody knows she's there, but nobody talks about her. I'm talking about it.
Now, this was a guy who talked differently than politicians usually talk. Was there something about that, Laura, that you thought appealed to people?
Certainly. And his sense that there were issues and there were numbers and data and facts that the insiders weren't paying attention to, that really the American people needed to focus on government and what it was doing from not just kind of a higher rhetoric standpoint, but from an effectiveness and an efficiency mindset.
Now, this was a wealthy person running against the party establishments of both parties, saying he was talking to a group of people in the public who were neglected by the political class. Sound familiar? Was there a similar strain then to what Donald Trump took advantage of when he ran as a Republican?
Well, certainly this has been a strain of campaigning really since Jimmy Carter launched his bid in 1976. We have seen this desire for outsiders. It originally meant sort of those who were outside Washington and really looked at governors as the primary targets for that messaging. But then eventually that became business people and celebrities and others who were interested in kind of trying to claim the top office.
Talking to Laura Brown from George Washington University, talking about independent and third-party candidates in American presidential races. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we should see more of these campaigns? Have you ever voted for a candidate without a D or R next to their name in the race for president, call 800-642-1234. Looking back at Perot's first run, 1992, he then ran in the Reform Party in 96. But some people looked at 92 and said Perot took votes away from George H.W. Bush, the Republican incumbent, allowing Bill Clinton to win. Seen a lot of analysis that says, no, that's not necessarily how it panned out. How do you try to break that down?
Well, many political science studies have looked at this. And in fact, most of the most serious kind of analyses of those votes saw that most of what he did was bring new voters into the electorate, people who hadn't really voted for either party, and that he did draw fairly equally from both parties in terms of those people who had already previously voted. So I think what is missing here is that there just was an interest in change in this election, and it was the feeling that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans could deliver on that. Ross Perot seemed an unlikely and interesting candidate, and certainly he was able to capitalize on that restlessness within the electorate.
Now, Ross Perot was the high point when it comes to popular votes in recent history of a non-Democratic or Republican presidential candidate. I did some digging. It looks like the last time an electoral vote went to a third party was 1972. A faithless elector decided to throw their vote to the Libertarian Party. Can you talk, Laura, about the challenges facing someone, even someone with a lot of money to throw into a race, of running as an independent or a third party candidate?
Well, if you want to run as an independent, first you have to qualify for the ballots in the different states. In order to win the presidency, you do need to be on all 50 ballots. And that is a high hurdle and one that requires a tremendous amount of organizing. And that is where, in fact, I think Ross Perot really proved his mettle. The people who supported him got him on every ballot, so much so that that eventually became the Reform Party line item, which also was there in 1996 and 2000. But it is also the case, aside from that, that you need to win not just popular votes, but electoral college votes. And that means that you need to place first in states all across the country to try to do that. And this is where the only real kind of successful electoral vote independent candidates have been those individuals who had regional issues, and those were really issues of segregation in the time at mid sort of like 1900. So you saw Strom Thurmond in 1948, and then, of course, George Wallace in 1968.
I've seen people who support third parties say there's an unfair structural built-in advantage now for Democrats and Republicans that effectively locks out anybody else. Is there something to that argument?
Well, the Electoral College itself tends to do that. It is also the case that in our winner-take-all system, where the person who gets the most votes wins essentially the office or all the electoral votes, what you end up having is a situation where voters don't want to waste their vote on a candidate they don't believe will win. And it is also the case that people who are serious contenders don't want to run as an independent because they don't believe they will win. So it ends up being something of kind of a circular problem that is very difficult to get out of because there is something of a lock with the two political parties.
I've seen some math out there suggesting that in a bunch of recent elections, the difference in key states between the votes between the main two candidates, the two-party candidates, you look at that number, and then you look at the number of votes that went to third-party candidates, even though it wasn't huge overall. The votes for third-party candidates were way more than the gap between the two candidates. So with that in mind, do even these small number of votes for third-party candidates, do they sway the outcomes in key states?
Well, they certainly can. I mean, we can look back just to 2016, and we can look to your state of Wisconsin, and it is true that you know, Donald Trump won 1.4 million votes there, and Hillary Clinton won about 1.38 million votes there, and Gary Johnson won about 100,000 votes there. So it would have made the difference had those votes apportioned differently for either candidate. The problem is that you can't always replay these elections, and you can't always know who would have voted for whom. I think it is fair to say that a number of Republicans in Wisconsin voted for Gary Johnson because they weren't pleased with Donald Trump as a candidate. But it is also the case that many Democrats voted for Jill Stein, who earned about 31,000 votes there and perhaps could have come close to making the difference for Hillary Clinton. So what you really have is a situation where the people who are voting may matter if the race is close, but in a sort of post-election analysis, it's difficult to truly know how that election would have gone.
Talking to Laura Brown from George Washington University about third-party and independent presidential candidates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever voted or would you vote for a third-party candidate for president? Or do you see that as a wasted vote? Would you consider a third-party candidate in 2020? Do you think that the deck is stacked against non-Democratic, non-Republican candidates? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about third-party and independent candidates for president after the passing of Ross Perot, who picked up about 19% of the popular vote back in 1992. Laura Brown is our guest, associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we should have more independent and third-party presidential candidates? Have you voted for one? Would you vote for one? You're looking for one in 2020? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question for your guest is that what I found troubling, especially with the last election, is that there doesn't seem to be a fiscal conservative, socially liberal third-party candidate. In particular, I look at John Delaney for this election cycle as someone who would be a wonderful candidate, yet he is getting zero traction. I also remember John Anderson from what it was 30 years ago when he ran as a liberal Republican. And I'm, as a conservative, I had to vote for Johnson this last election because I just couldn't find myself to vote for the current president. My question is, has the Libertarian Party really co-opted the fiscally conservative, socially liberal aspect, and is there a way to get that type of view out in the voting possibilities?
Charlie, thanks. Interesting. Laura, what do you think?
Well, you know, I actually think it is fascinating that your caller just brought that up, because that is this ideological space that many of the sort of interested independents want to push forward in. I mean, whether you're talking about Howard Schultz or Michael Bloomberg, some of these individuals are really interested in being kind of more fiscally conservative and socially liberal. And yet neither party seems to care much about it. And if you look at the announcement today that the budget deficit just once again widened to over $700 billion this fiscal year, it's pretty extraordinary how much kind of fiscal restraint or responsibility is not on the agenda of either party. And you would think independents would have a viable space there. But the truth of the matter is there just aren't as many activists in this space as there used to be.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. Harry joins us now from Burlington. Harry, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I find it interesting that you just mentioned what I was going to mention. I've never voted for an independent candidate for the reason you said a few minutes back, that it seems like a wasted vote. But I would vote for any independent who would make the budget deficit the issue, because I think that's the elephant in the room nobody wants to talk about. Both Republicans and Democrats seem willing to spend our grandchildren's future away, and nobody will address it.
Harry, thanks for the call. Laura, I'll put an asterisk on this. I've noted this on the show before. It seems like both parties are really interested in worrying about the deficit when the other party is in control of the White House.
I think that's right. I also think that no one really wants to face kind of the tough medicine that would go with solving issues related to our debt and deficit. I think we have seen attempts at creating commissions and whole proposals and plans, and they seem pretty much dead on arrival. And I would agree with your callers that this is something that should be thought about a lot more than it is. But unfortunately, we're living in a good economy, and so there doesn't appear to be a price that we are paying yet for having this budget deficit that we do.
Thanks for the call, Harry. We heard from Susan on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Susan says, I voted third party, but will not again. I'm a progressive. I'll vote for most Dems, even if they represent some things I oppose. I will not vote for the extremists, she says, who are Republicans. Now, this was a big topic of conversation, Laura, in the last election. We heard from callers, definitely, who identified as progressive Democrats, who said in that instance they weren't necessarily going to vote for Hillary Clinton. And it seems at least some of them followed up on that. Do you see that as a possibility in 2020?
Well, I do think what is interesting is that because the sort of pundits and the conventional wisdom prior to the 2016 election really suggested that Hillary Clinton was going to win the race, I think there were a non-trivial number of people who said, I'm going to vote for a third party to send a message that I'm not happy with either party's choice of their candidates. And I think many people ended up feeling sort of shocked and surprised when Donald Trump ended up winning, because had they believed he was going to win, they might not have voted third party. So I do think you're going to see really something of what happened in the 2004 election, which is that people said, we don't care that there's a third party candidate. We're not voting for them. We're voting for only the two major parties, because they had felt kind of, you know, bitten and stung by the 2000 election, where Ralph Nader and Pat Buchanan had taken votes in Florida, perhaps to the detriment of Al Gore, perhaps to the detriment of George W. Bush.
Talking about third parties, independent presidential candidates, Laura Brown is with us from George Washington University. Let's go back to your calls now. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'll say that I voted third party in the 2016 presidential election because I was not enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and so I went libertarian. And I knew that it didn't stand much of a chance of having much of an impact, but I felt like my vote would be making a statement. And I'd be curious about the merits of ranked voting, because I felt like that, or I feel like that might facilitate some independence. And I'm curious about getting into politics myself, and I don't identify as a Republican or a Democrat, and I think ranked voting might enable independents like myself to stand more of a chance.
Jacob, thanks for the call. We hear things like that, ranked voting or proportional representation or other changes to the way we vote, maybe opening the door for third parties. Laura, might be a tough haul to get there, though.
Well, that's right. And I mean, one of the most difficult issues is, let's just say that the Electoral College votes were all allocated proportionally, so that there was essentially more of an incentive for a third party candidate to get in, win some popular votes in a state, and win a proportion of those states' electoral votes. Well, the Constitution does say that if no candidate gets a majority in the Electoral College, then it would go to the U.S. House of Representatives to decide the president. So I think you could end up with some very adverse possibilities were we to go down that road. But, you know, I think there is a valid case for it. I think it is real, given the fact that now sort of the largest plurality in the country actually identify as independents, that there needs to be some way to help independents feel as though they can have representation without selling out their views to one of the major parties.
Is there, thanks for that call, Jacob. Laura, in our last few moments, have the parties changed in a way that they're less of a home to a wider number of people? They're not maybe the big tents with wider ideological diversity that they used to be.
Well, that's exactly right. What we've seen over the last 25 years is that the Republican Party has become more conservative, so it is more aligned with conservative, socially conservative voters, and the Democratic Party has become more aligned with progressive politics, both at the cultural level and at the fiscal level. The Republicans don't really have a clear stance around fiscal policy because Donald Trump push them sort of away from their traditional free trade, small government perspective. But it is the case that there is kind of this center of the electorate that a lot of people feel as though they're not being heard. And there might be other opportunities to allow them to vote for third parties were we to change aspects of our system.
Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Laura Brown is an associate professor of political science and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Her books include Jockeying for the American Presidency. We talked with her about the role of third party and independent presidential candidates after the passing of Ross Perot.